Wes, this is your fourth Hills Have Eyes movie you've actually worked on, correct?
I guess it is, yeah.
Now, how many eyes do these hills actually have, then?
Thousands. As one character says in the film, when another character says, how many do you think there are? He says, too many. I don't know, too many.
Okay. Jonathan, I wanted to ask you, in working on this, what was it like, first of all, what was it like working with Dad? And was it somewhat, is horror movies kind of just sort of mundane since you kind of grew up around them?
Well, horror is never mundane, you know, or it's not horror. For me, it was a great experience working with Dad. I mean, who better to work on a horror movie with than Wes Craven? You know, we had an idea that we were both very excited about, and you know, we sat in a room and just went to town on it, you know, and he was great with me, and very respectful, and you know, heard out all my ideas. We you know, both wrote at the same time different scenes and traded files back and forth, and you know, would bring new ideas to the other person's you know, would brush up the other person's scenes, and you know, it just went incredibly well. You know, better than I ever could have imagined, and just came up with a really compelling and harsh horror movie, which you know, never a dull moment.
Well, Wes, how about you? What was it like working with your son in this?
It was a lot of fun. You know, it was just a lot of fun. I mean, Jonathan had been writing at this point. He'd been writing a long time in many different venues. He's written screenplays, and he's also written. He's been a journalist, so I knew I'd be going in the room with a professional and somebody who understood deadlines. And there was no way in hell that I could have done this by myself. And he's my son, so it was you know, guaranteed time to be with him under a very interesting situation. I mean, we had never written together, you know, sitting down and writing something together. So I think it's easily the longest that Jonathan and I have been around each other for decades, you know. So it was, you know, it's always a little risky feeling when you first go into it. But I think by the end of the second day, it was very clear that we, you know, were comfortable working with each other. We both had lots of ideas. We both could type very fast. And, you know, we were going to get it done. So it was just a pleasure.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about the movie. First of all, how did you go about saying how are we going to top? Did you actually say how are we going to top the first one? How'd you go about approaching this film?
John, you want to take that one?
I didn't feel like we felt you know, intimidated by the first one. I mean, you know, the first one is a great story. I mean, obviously, it's got a lot of legs. It's, you know, a story basically that he created in 1976, and or you know, before then, and has been powerful. You know, the original still stands up. It's still a great horror movie. Alex Aja tweaked it and brought some, you know, and brought, you know, made it a little bit more contemporary. But you know, I think that, you know, my feeling was that the two of us in a room will, you know, will come up with something really, really, really strong and effective, and we just had a lot of fun with that. You know, the main challenge was the amount of time that we had, and you know, and the other challenge was that, you know, the original story was a you know, an innocent family, and there's something, you know, so compelling and primal about that. I think that, you know, if anything, the challenge was to you know, was how to, without having a, you know, an innocent family, you know, wander back into the hills, how to make it as compelling and scary on that level. And I think that we created our own family with these trainees, these young soldiers who are not quite ready for battle yet, you know, became their own little family.
So how did you really overcome the difference between, you know, like a family with a baby and a hippie guy who doesn't like guns, and switch that to people that are armed to the teeth and trained to kill? How do you retain the danger zone on that?
Yeah, well, I think we're very conscious of that being the danger. So first of all, we wanted to have a feeling like they were kind of a quibbling family, or at least a bunch of siblings, you know. And the second thing was that we very specifically made them only halfway through their training and totally unaware that they were going to be facing this kind of situation. They had just completed a sort of war scenario simulation course and done badly, and they were on their way to be trucked over to another part of the base where their rifle range was. And basically, the sergeant says to complete their disaster of this training. And on the way, they're just told to drop off a piece of equipment to some scientists that are working way back in one of the kind of forbidden zones where there's a secret project going on. So, you know, they go and drop something off in 30 minutes and get out of there. And instead, when they get there, the scientists are missing, and they get a distress call on a walkie-talkie and see a flash of a mirror way up a mountain. And their sergeant, just to kind of punish them, says, "We've got to go up and rescue whoever the hell that is." And off they go with one clip of ammunition and basically the rifles on their backs. And they're not, so that we made it so they weren't armed to the teeth, and they weren't, you know, incredibly trained, and they were not in any way expecting to be in the situation that they quickly get into.
Okay. When I saw the remake last year, I had a laugh because there are a couple people that walked out before you would the scene where you'd expect them to walk out during. I said, well, they're really unprepared then. Are there any points in this movie that are pretty extreme and crazy that might cause somebody to walk out?
I'd say the opening title sequence.
Yeah.
The opening title sequence.
Just
pretty
for listeners.
All right. There's a couple. I mean,
So you're going to catch them early, huh?
Yeah. I mean, we want to get the weaklings out of the theater right away.
I know that movies like The Hills Have Eyes and other horror movies have a very strong sort of gorehound following. Will this please that audience?
Well, I suppose. It certainly doesn't pull any punches in that area. It's not what we set out. How gory can we make this? You know, it's always much more about how kind of shocking it is, or how, you know, it kind of gets you personally, I think, that makes something memorable. So we try to go for those moments that would stick in your mind for that as much as something that was specifically, you know, gory or very bloody or whatever. It's always about the thing that gets under your skin, and that's usually not tons of blood.
Although there is a lot of blood.
We do it.
Is it, for both of you, I'd like to hear from both of you on this, is it ever disturbing for you to write these sort of scenes or these sort of incidences?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it is, but then you know you're doing the right thing. I mean, you know, to me, the world is a disturbing place, and, you know, what you're doing when you're, I mean, to me, when you're working on this type of stuff is you're conjuring up, you know, the fears and the reflection of what's going on in the world. And, you know, so I think sometimes it is very disturbing, you know, but I think that's, you know, you're in the right place. I mean, because you're facing your own fears, you know, when you're working on this stuff to a certain extent. So, yeah, I think it is disturbing, but I think that's what you're trying to get at.
It's also strangely levitating. I think it's a similar thing to you know, standing in the back of a theater when people have just seen a horror film are coming out, and they're all kind of laughing and their cheeks are flushed and they've been scared to death. You're dealing with something that in reality is horrible, but within the realm of I mean, the lightest way to look at it is in the realm of make-believe, but let's just say within the realm of theater, there's a lightening of that terrible burden of the perception of how dark life can be by seeing something that is in a story form where at least there's the coherence of, sort of the Joseph Campbell sort of hero or heroine or pair that go through it and survive. So the audience has at least an example of where there is a survival of the fittest, and I think almost inevitably they identify with that one person that's able to get through it. And that's really what these films are about, is survival of psyche, survival of survival, you know, on the most primal level of could I get through that situation or not.
Have you, either of you, do you travel at all? And have you ever been out kind of in the deserted desert type thing? Does that kind of scare you, or in the woods or something like that?
No, we never get out much.
I was in the woods once where there was a witch in a house. Yeah, I've been out in the desert. I mean, yeah, I know Dad has. I mean, there is something very primal about the desert and the woods and nature. And if you live in California, in Southern California, you probably get out to Joshua Tree and or Death Valley. And there's something very, very brutal and beautiful about the desert.
It's just you're very far from all the appurtenances of civilization, you know. So you're out beyond where telephones work and beyond where the police go, and you sort of go back in time to a much more primitive environment, and that is always an intriguing place to go. You kind of pare things down to their absolute minimal status, and that's something that horror films have almost always done. You know, part of it is financial. You go to a place where you don't have to buy permits, but it's also to put your characters out beyond all of the sort of safety nets and see what they could do.
Did you experience any problems with the rating of this film at all?
Yes. We had to kill members of the MPAA to get this film approved.
Did you get that on film yourself?
Well, yes, but we just have it on the internet. We can't release it.
We had a few cuts we had to make, and they were surprisingly negligent, I think. No. We don't think of it in the way of we got away with something, but there's something good about the fact that something you put on screen that was very, very intense got through the censors without being ruined. More than anything else, that's always the feeling that, you know, people with totally different sensibilities under the guise of protecting phantom children will, you know, change your expression, your art form. And in this case, I don't think that happened. So it was, in a way, it was gratifying.
Which desert was this filmed in? Was this filmed in, it was Morocco was the first one was filmed, correct?
Yeah. John was there the whole time, he could tell you about it.
Yeah, this was shot out in and around Ouarzazate, Morocco, which is sort of in the at the mouth of the Sahara region of Morocco. It's a very old, jagged, beautiful desert region. It's not unlike New Mexico, but obviously it's in its ways is even more remote and even scarier in some ways.
Do you two expect to collaborate on future scripts?
Certainly, one of the options, one of the possibilities. I think both of us feel like we've just kind of emerged from this film and are catching up on sleep and getting to know our families again. So, we haven't thought of what the next step is. In some ways, this was a very specific situation, and on the way, it turned out really great. So, we'll see.
Now, it's correct that they gave you, what, a month? You said you could do this in a month? Was that sort of the throwing that back?
That's basically what it was. I was up against a hard deadline because I committed to a, speaking of travel, my wife and I were going to be going to Galapagos and Machu Picchu for a month of June. So, I knew, I had 1 month to try to do this, and I thought, there's no way I can do this, but I bet if Jonathan and I went in a room, we could do it, and that's kind of how it got to where it was, and I think almost literally went in May 1st and came out at May 31st or whatever the last day in May was and turned over our first draft.
Now, just kind of like one just general question about horror movies, and this is really for both of you since you've been around them most of each of your lives. What do you think of the sort of resurgence of the modern horror movie, these very violent, shocking movies and the remakes that have been coming out in maybe the last 3 or 4 years, which seems to have been the big push?
Jonathan? Well, let me address, there's that to me, a one is, what do you think about the violent, you know, the incredibly violent movies? And I think, you know, I just think it's a very fertile time for horror, and it's a fertile time for art and music. You know, in that it's a, you know, it's a crazy, crazy time in our world, and you know, I think that, you know, art and entertainment kicks up a few notches. You know, at times like this, and particularly horror, which I think deals with, you know, a reflection of the primal fears of society, and the primal fears of society are incredibly intense right now in the United States, and you know, people are processing a lot of very, very dark stuff, which is widely available. You know, our own government has participated in a policy of torture, and you know, you see you know, insurgents sawing people's heads off with knives on the internet, and people being blown up. I mean, it's crazy. It's mayhem, and the level of violence is incredibly brutal. And you know, as a filmmaker, you set out to make entertainment. You know, by and large, and which is certainly what we did. But you know, you also realize that you reflect your life experience. And right now, you know, life is extremely intense. So it doesn't surprise me that horror films are as well. You know, the last time horror films were this intense was in the 70s, and you know, at the sort of tail end of the Vietnam era. You know, society was horrified, and films reflected that.
Wes, how about you?
Oh, I think John said it. You know, it's very much of just reacting to what you are reading and realizing. You know, you have an enemy that seems like animalistic, but is really very smart, very human, and has their own reasons for doing what they're doing that they think are legitimate and even sacred. And you have, you know, American kids being sent into a situation where they are getting maimed on a very consistent and killed on a very consistent basis in a way that doesn't seem to be accomplishing much. And then there are, you know, one revelation after another about the government and, you know, everything from lies to for getting us into the situation to systematic torture and doing all sorts of things that are illegal by various international laws. So this is, you know, this is not like Mary Poppins time. This is a time when not only do we have, we're facing a very resilient enemy that could at any time deliver a crippling blow to us just by setting off a dirty bomb, but we're having to relook at all of the institutions of our government, everything from habeas corpus to the privacy of one's conversations to, you know, following Geneva Conventions to not doing torture without any expressed reason. So, you know, we're in a rough ballgame right now. As Jonathan said, that will get reflected by the artists of its time. And whether the grown-ups like that or not, that's the legitimate topic of the day.